Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live a good life and to create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social, conscious, and unconscious dynamics and desires. Welcome to Pandemic Psychodynamics, Russia. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking to my guest, Irina Izatova, who is an executive coach, an organizational consultant. She is the president of the Association of Psychoanalytic Coaching and Business Consulting, a lecturer at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow, and a Lacanian psychoanalyst. She's also a colleague of mine at ISPSO, and I've known Irina for a good number of years, and I'm delighted to be able to welcome you today, Irina.
Hello, Simon. So good to talk to you today.
Good. So I'm in the west coast of Ireland, living on the edge by the sea, and you're living in Moscow. What's going on, Irina?
Well, Moscow is on the umpteenth day of the self-confinement. Yesterday, it was announced that the confinement will extend until the end of May. So if anyone had any hopes to be freed, then all the hopes have gone the other way. But on the other hand, I'm sitting in my flat on the 13th floor with the windows facing the beautiful park, maybe one of the most beautiful in Moscow, which is closed for walking.
Oh dear. No, dear, that's frustrating. So you see the beauty, but you can't feel it or touch it.
Oh, yes, Simon. It's very much of a description of what is happening today. When you see the beauty, when you want to touch it, when you see a person on your screen, when you see a group of colleagues on your screen, and you can do whatever, enjoying talking, but you are deprived, as well as your body is, of being in closeness and connectedness with them.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this deprivation. And as you know, we both share an interest in Jacques Lacan and his work. And I'm interested in how this society of prohibition is playing out. Because in the West, we like to talk a lot about kind of our freedoms, our individual freedoms, our openness, and suddenly we were told, no, you can't go out. No, you cannot. You're in lockdown. And it's kind of interesting because that also aligned to kind of a shift in political culture where people were moving away, I think, from an attachment to being kind of open and free. And populist politicians in the West were kind of on the rise, as almost as if people were predicting a kind of a more prohibitive society. How does the kind of deprivations kind of play out for you? I know you're kind of you're linked to patients and clients, and you have a lot of links in the university. What's your kind of sense of kind of how people are reacting to this kind of lockdown, this deprivation?
Well, it is interesting, perhaps for you as a Western person, having been living in the world of democracy for quite a long time, and now so abruptly, when what Lacan named the real of pandemic has crashed itself onto civilization, as you in the West have always known it. And the answer to this impossible question, Kivoy, as Lacan put it, what do you want from me? What do you want, a virus, from us? One of the responses from the politicians was this censorship and deprivation. While here in Russia, to think about it, we have been living for about 1,000 years, even more. I'm thinking about when the Christianity was first introduced. Yeah. So first from the knights of the very old Russia, killing each other, particularly in the Freudian sense, in his seminal work, Totem and Taboo, gathering this United States, slavery, and the masters. So I'm thinking about the discourse of the master that has been present in Russia in so many different forms, but with this basic idea that that of deprivation of the freedom of speech, deprivation of the freedom of movement. As a slave, you were tied up so closely to your master. The only thing that you could choose was either to obey, and then it would be the good knight, and then the good czar, and then the good general secretary, or you rebel, but still you keep yourself subjectively in the position of the object. So the survival regime is well familiar to the people, particularly of the elderly generation. I can give an example of my mother-in-law. She is a remarkable and loveliest woman. She is 65 plus. That was the first layer of the population which was banned from walking. She defied it totally and completely when we, me and my husband, were making serious requests for her to start wearing a mask. She looked at me up and down and asked, "Is there a war? I don't see any bombing." And she has her walk twice a day. She keeps strolling because this is something that keeps her alive. And she doesn't want to know anything about the prohibition because she has seen something much more severe than that.
Yes, that's very interesting. That resonates with I have family in Poland, as you know, and one of the 90-year-old kind of grandparents is exactly the same. I'm going to walk. I'm not going to be prohibited. I think it's interesting as well, just to let listeners know who aren't Lacanians, the discourse of the master is one of Lacan's kind of four discourses and how kind of how we engage with the world, the master, the analyst, the hysteric, and the university. And these kind of play out differently. In the West, I think we have a fantasy, an imaginary that we kind of we're very free. And I've for a long time have written about the new authoritarians and how political correctness and how the so-called liberal progressives also have an authoritarian side. And in the UK, there was a lot of talk at the beginning of this that the British would never kind of put up with lockdowns, so they kind of put it off, and actually they put up with it very, very easily, and people kind of stepped into kind of this kind of acceptance of the master very, very quickly, which I thought was kind of interesting as well, you know, from kind of the West. I mean, personally, I mean, I've also been thinking about the pleasures of transgression in the lockdown. You know, we were limited to kind of a certain number of kilometers where we can go out walking. And to transgress just beyond that boundary is a real pleasure, without putting oneself in danger. And I wonder kind of how coming out of this period of kind of intense discourse of the master, where there really is, like, you know, you cannot even leave your house in Spain. There's people being locked up for 48 days, you know, children not being allowed out.
Oh.
I'm wondering kind of how that's going to kind of play out kind of in the wider global world. It's kind of an interesting kind of new for kind of a whole generation, really, as opposed to kind of the generation you're referring to, which kind of grew up with it and was part of their kind of life. How to kind of get around the prohibitions and kind of live a livable life, a good life.
You know, what I think about it is that the pandemic has done something really, really uncanny to the values of democracy, which suddenly appeared so fragile, as you have just mentioned. that the subjectivity that has always been the key element of capitalist freedom, if you wish, has so quickly got disrupted, got fragmented, so that the master discourse seems to be well back again.
Yeah.
While it makes me think that so many times now I hear a question from my coaching clients, my executive clients, my analytical clients, analysands, and the question is very simple: what do we do with this? How can I deal with that?
Yeah.
What can I do to cope with all this? And you know, as a psychoanalyst, when we hear something like this, or id, as Freud named it, in reference to the unconscious, we say this to give at least some kind of name to the pandemic, the confinement, the lockdown, this generalized anxiety, the fear of catching a coronavirus, particularly because more and more evidence is now that it goes without any symptoms at all.
Yeah.
So when the words are impossible to find, we face the discourse of the real, because it's always on the side of traumatic, sudden, unforeseen, where all the calculations fail and all the former identities are in serious danger. And this hugely impacts on subjectivity, both individually and collectively. And then this lure of fantasy and desire that binds subjects to the illusory satisfactions provided by the other, the father who knows what to do.
Yeah.
Like, look at Trump, look at Boris Johnson, at President Putin. They're all trying to revive these omnipotent fathers of the nations, and then we all become the objects of their enjoyment.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, the return of the father is interesting, and there's a lot of debate in the kind of the press and around how different leaders of different genders have handled this, how Merkel in Germany and the New Zealand Prime Minister, how women have managed this differently to kind of this machismo kind of father, return of the father, which I think is quite kind of interesting. In Ireland, we've had a kind of a much less kind of engagement in terms of kind of the rhetoric of war. Like in I watch the UK news, and there's always this kind of, we're fighting a war, this is a war, and we must kind of work together and protect ourselves. And much less in some other countries where it's kind of a more collaborative, kind of more thoughtful approach, which I think is kind of interesting. One thing I was thinking about in my work with clients, I'm still kind of engaging with clients, kind of all the face-to-face work dropped off, as you know, so we're spending time talking to clients on Zoom. But one of the things I've been trying to think about and put together is maybe a course or a webinar, a time for understanding, because it seems to me if you take Lacan's kind of three moments, the he wrote about the instant of the glance.
And
the
instant
of the glance, I think in my thinking in related to pandemic time, it was a reactive time where people kind of first went into kind of shock and like, this is not happening, and kind of particularly kind of these master figures, you know, we'll get through this, we kind of, it won't really affect us, and kind of they didn't lock down quick enough. And then
you're very much right, this is not happening, this is happening somewhere else, it is with them. They are at pain, but not us. But sooner or later it's creeping back to the heart of the of the existence. Well, no, it might happen to me.
Yeah. And then I observed a kind of from denial to kind of activism. So people kind of, we must do something, anything. And it was like, you know, protect the economy, do something. And it was like people kind of just, I mean, like in Britain, they built kind of, I think, 3 or 4 hospitals in 2 weeks, which aren't being used because they're not actually needed, but it's like, you know, we must be seen to be doing something, you know, urgently, and there's this kind of activism, you know. And in the Kahn's framework, at the moment, there was this denial and then activism, and then there's kind of a, I think we're in a kind of a second moment now where there's this time for comprehending or time for understanding, where we're kind of trying to kind of engage differently. And I think that's kind of what I'm trying to work with the leaders in the businesses kind of I've been working with, is to kind of think about how they kind of engage, not in kind of activism, like everyone went to kind of Zoom mania and then kind of...
Most definitely. Acting out is an old trick of the human body and mind. I do agree with you, and it's quite resonant with me, that it's so scary of what is happening, that people are trying to use every possible discourse, for example, the one that calls for repentance and contrition, and the others that are starting to begin seriously consider what we might do without all governments, like, for example, to entrust to Amazon the management of the affairs of state. And actually, the whole concept of state is now being seriously reconsidered, at least on the networks, different social networks. And yet, the way I'm reading what you have just shared with me is that what we as psychoanalytically oriented coaches and consultants can do for the businesses to stop this frenetic activities. Find themselves with our support a space for reflection.
Yeah.
A space for thinking, a space for being honest to themselves, yeah, to each other.
Yeah.
That would be a very valuable thing to arrange, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think the real work is, I mean, I often talk about kind of let's do the real work, not kind of this acting out work, everyone kind of manic and acting out, but kind of what's the real work? And I think the real work is exactly that. It's this time for understanding. It's a time for, it's a returning to something kind of where we have to find some anchor points. And
oh, yes.
I find it interesting, Maya, and I'll ask you in a second about kind of the church in Russia, because I find it interesting. I've gone back to two kind of foundational texts. So I'm reading Civilization and Its Discontents. Mm. Working with a Lacanian group, we're kind of working through it, and it's being kind of read to us. And it took me back to the time when I spent in monasteries, where you'd sit in a monastery, and during mealtime, you'd sit in silence, and you'd be read to. One of the monks would kind of read, and they'd either read the Bible or they'd read a novel. And to be read to kind of is very, very powerful. And I'm kind of really revisiting kind of this is a kind of an idea of how to kind of engage people where they can kind of not just kind of click buttons and not kind of just be kind of activist or acting out, where they can actually sit and they can listen and engage in a very different way with the text. And I wonder what your thoughts were.
With the text, you know, what idea comes to me as a response to you? We all become now the objects of gaze.
Explain that to our listeners.
The object of gaze is one of objects that Lacan came up with, and those are objects that are connected deeply with our lack and our desire. Yeah. And of course with our jouissance, the surplus enjoyment. So it's unimaginable era of gazing, staring. Everyone is watching everyone else. But it's kind of, we no longer see ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone seems the same in masks and the gloves, which is a recent requirement of the Moscow authorities. So we engage in this into this personal jouissance, but collectively gathering into multiplying themselves online activities, filling most of our time with this busying ourselves, not to notice that we are suffering from a tremendous loss. Walter Benjamin. He called this aura. Aura of bodily presence and this loss of bodies.
I think that's very important. This idea of defense against loss, and someone said to me, it's like grieving. I was explaining how kind of I go out and I feel pretty good, and suddenly I get a wave of kind of anger or something upon me, and it was my colleague reminded me, it's like a grieving process where you kind of, you have to get on with life, and then suddenly this wave of grief of the lost object kind of comes to you. And I think that's right. I think there's been a kind of engagement with this of disbelief of kind of manicness, but it's like now I think it's hitting that this is not short term. It's going to be long term. We're not going to get out of the lockdown quickly. Even when we do, there's going to be big consequences to the economy and to our lives, and nobody knows the future. And there's a lot of grieving and a lot of kind of rethinking to do to kind of find our way out, navigate our way through this. And I think we've only just begun that journey.
Well, we have just begun, but it's really a good sign that some journeys have begun. Like yesterday, I was a participant of the discussing panel organized by my colleagues and dear friends, Jim Kranz, Barbara Williams, and Fabio De Pice. And it was such a relief to be in the group of like-minded friends where we could talk about grieving, about not understanding what our identities are, because mostly what we have known about our identities, it's rather in the part of the imaginary. And we have to start with us, with ourselves, as Barbara put it yesterday, to nourish and grow your ability to be steady and sober in your practice.
Yeah.
And what we have done here in Moscow in our association for about a month and a half now, I and my colleague from the board have been running a reflexive group under the name of Our Practice in These Times.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's some of the work is to create these spaces where we can actually rethink, where we can be, where we can kind of engage with kind of our anxieties and our grief, and also to explore something else I'm very interested in is our desire. And I'm wondering, this podcast is focusing on kind of how to live a good life and create the good society, which, as you know, is a purpose of the Analytic Network Coaching program, of which you partook in.
Oh, yes.
And I wondered, through this pandemic time, what your thoughts are about how we can try and live a good life and how we can try and create a good society coming out of this.
Well, I think it is a very good time of rethinking, reinventing the human dignity from the perspective of noticing how quickly we can become an object of enjoyment and desire of the other, and responding to your question, how we can, the way I understand it, how we can keep loyalty to our own desire. You remember that it was one of the most famous Lacan's phrases: "Don't ever give up on your desire." Don't, as well as "Don't ever give up on your desire." The desire to recreate something which could be a little bit better place for living our world.
Mm-hmm.
It is my deep-seated hope, not this kind of let's save the world, and I don't believe that at all.
Yeah.
But try to make at your particular spot where you are, your family, your clients, your colleagues are, make these spaces for doing and reflecting on what we are doing. And then perhaps because there would be more space for thinking, the acting out would less and less become necessary as a tool for survival. So actually, I'm for living and not surviving.
I think that's a wonderful way to end our conversation, Irina. Don't give up on your desire. I'm for living, not for surviving.
Thank you, Simon. It's been a real pleasure talking to you today.
Yeah, it's been fabulous. Thank you very much. You take care. Say hello to everyone in Moscow.
Oh, we'll be happy to see you as soon as it is possible.
I look forward to it. Take care. Goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you for listening to Edgy Ideas. If you enjoyed our podcast and would like more information about our coaching, training, and events, please contact simon@analyticnetwork.com or go to www.analyticnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.